This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
All right, here we go on a Thursday. It's Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you. Coming up in about an hour or so, we'll check in with Danen Hughes, former Chiefs wide receiver. Of course, he's part of the broadcast. We'll be in Charlotte. He'll be out there Sunday, a rare noon kickoff right here on 96.5 The Fan. Yeah.
Especially, I mean, the slate this weekend in the NFL is not very good.
Chiefs-Panthers should be the noon game. It should be.
Well, the Chiefs are four of the five most watched games this year, though.
They are. If they were playing Carolina at 325, it would do better than a normal Carolina Panthers game, but I understand why it's at noon. That means pregame coverage starts this Sunday at 9 a.m. with Danen Hughes and Mitch Holthus, Josh Klingler, Dan Israel. That's coming your way. Also, a little bit later on today, it's a Snitch Line Thursday. I'm telling you way in advance because we don't do this as often as we used to, but today is a Snitch Line Thursday, around 1:15 or so. You got some time to think about it. Something that you've been meaning to get off your chest, something you saw around the workplace, something you did. Also, the holidays around the corner. So that's the kind of theme we're going with today. You can text them in a little bit later on, 913-586-7965. But doesn't this game on Sunday and the feeling around this team and offense remind you a little bit of last year heading into the Bears game? Where we all thought that, okay, this is,
I mean, it was a struggle for the offense up to that Bears game last
year. Does that not feel, not the same feeling for this one? Because you said yesterday on the show, you thought it was a vanilla offense when you had Ross Tucker on. You thought it was a vanilla offense against Buffalo.
I thought that it was maybe the most plain, boring game plan they had had going into a game all season. And I'll be honest, I'm having a hard time imagining why this week would be any different. What do I think they're going to do? Show the world to the Carolina Panthers for what point? So yeah, I kind of feel like even though I got this borderline boring version of an offense that I don't want to see very often if I'm the Chiefs, because what I credit them for the most is their ability to be creative and find different ways to attack defenses other teams don't, is the Panthers going to be the week that that fires up? Really? Carolina? I have a hard time. So, like, for your purposes, yeah, I kind of feel like maybe this is a get-right game. That Buffalo game frustrated me because, in a lot of ways, I don't buy into the full conspiracy that is it was vanilla because they didn't want to show Buffalo anything, as much as I think that they were trying to figure out, and Nate Taylor kind of indicated that maybe he feels that way, as much as I think sometimes where they're like, okay, our offense isn't going well. If you listen to Andy earlier this week, he said, we got to simplify some things. I am making things too complicated for some of these players pre-snap, and I got to start dumbing this down. That's not what he said, but he might as well have, so that we can be more efficient at the things we're good at. That's kind of what I think we're going to get in the Panthers game this weekend.
The Panthers have won a couple in a row, but let's not get anything confused about still who they are as a football team. Their wins are against the Giants by 2 points and a point against the Saints. Those are the two Bryce Young wins.
Those are two of the worst teams in the league.
The Giants have since benched their starting quarterback, and the Saints fired their head coach after they played the last go-around. So I don't suddenly think the Panthers have just figured it all out, even if Bryce Young has more confidence. I hear you on the offensive game plan against Buffalo, and I think it's a little bit of both of, yes, kind of not showing things, but I also think that's something in general, like in sports, I just don't believe in. I think sometimes we assume teams are holding everything back for another matchup. I think there are elements that they're willing to hold back or not show.
Or mainly, test against that defense to see if they work later.
Mainly because also Hollywood Brown might be available the next time they play. Isaiah Pacheco likely available the next time they play. That kind of stuff. So, of course, the offense is just going to look different. For this week against the Panthers, I don't expect them to have a ton of new looks or whatever. But at the same time, because they lost a week ago to Buffalo, I do think this is a bounce back spot, or at least a spot in which the Chiefs kind of get right and get the confidence back and get some guys that maybe haven't performed at the level they wanted recently. So Xavier Worthy had the drive against Buffalo where you're like, okay, here we go, but they haven't connected on the deep pass. I think Xavier Worthy, once again, they're going to have one or two opportunities again to connect. Is this the week it happens? That ultimately might be one of the most successful things that could come out of this game on Sunday, besides the obvious, which is a win.
They should borderline feed him in this game.
You know, I just think this has the makings of the Chicago game from a year ago. I don't know if they're going to win by 20+. I don't think they will. But I do think they're going to cover the 10.5. I do think they'll end up winning this thing comfortably, and that's why some other pieces might actually get in the game late. This is why, depending on Isaiah Pacheco's status, he was limited in practice yesterday along with Kareem Hunt. But wherever his status might be, maybe this is a game in which we actually do see somebody like Carson Steele or Samaje Perine late get more work than normal because they have the quick turnaround. They have the quick turnaround. Black Friday against the Raiders next week.
I mean, here's the thing: the Panthers reek. I mean, they're just like they give up the league worst 160 yards rushing per game, so they're dead last in the NFL at that. So to your point on Carson Steele, even from a betting angle, becomes very interesting if you think this game is a blowout. 160 yards per game. They give up the sixth most passing yards per game. So you're like, okay, so they're just not good on defense anywhere? Yes, that's correct. They are not good on defense anywhere at all. They are dead last in the NFL in points allowed per game. Look, some of this is the Chiefs' or offense is somewhat limited. I'm not going to pretend like it's not. It definitely is. But if you start going through their schedule, it's not going to be hard to find out how many of the league's top defenses they've been going against. Right now, points per game, the Chargers are number one. Denver's number three. Okay, well, I mean, there's two teams already they're going to face two more times. Pittsburgh's number two, by the way. By the time the season will finish, the Chiefs will finish the number one, number two, and number three defenses in the entire NFL in a points per game perspective. They've already faced Buffalo, who is ninth. They will face Houston, who's 11th. I mean, they've faced a lot of very good defenses.
First place schedule.
This is the league's worst defense. It just is. The only other team that they face in the bottom five so far this year would be Las Vegas and Cincinnati. Two teams who they had some of their, better offensive outputs against. Because they're bad defenses. The Chiefs can still take advantage of that in a lot of ways. But I think they can do it just by being the Vanilla is not bad this week. They're the worst rushing defense in the league. All right, fine. Just hand it to Carson Steele and Pacheco, and Kareem Hunt, and if Pacheco's back, just hand it to them like 45 times and call it a day. Like, I'm dead serious. This can be the most, we're essentially the army of the NFL this week. I don't care. Just run it as many times as you feel like against the league's worst rushing defense.
Yeah, I think offensively they're actually going to be fine in this one. It'll be, you know, the defense, Carolina, in the two wins they've had, they actually move the ball. But that was, again, I'll just continue to emphasize, against the Giants and the Saints. What's weird, just if you believe in trends and bounce back spots and things like that, when I was looking at this game, it stood out to me just because I wasn't aware of this. Did you know that in the four other times, because it's rare that Mahomes loses by a touchdown or more, we know that, right? It hasn't happened very often. In the four other times that Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs had lost a game by 7 points or more, the very next week we saw the team defensively in particular step up. So coming off a loss by more than one score four times, the defense that next game gave up just 17, 13, 17, and 14. Now, you could dive deeper and find out who's the opponent and everything. To me, the opponent doesn't matter because they're playing the Panthers, so it's as bad as it gets.
Yeah, like, it doesn't... look at the opponent. They're facing one of the league's worst teams.
Right, and so it's not been that the next week Mahomes and the offense just blows up and has 400 yards passing and four touchdowns. No, it's that the next week after a quote-unquote big loss where they lose by more than a touchdown, the defense plays some of their best football. So to me, I look at they're it inspired, as that, yeah. Where I don't know if the Chiefs are scoring 35 points against Carolina on Sunday, but are they going to win by a comfortable margin? I believe that because of the defense. This also feels like a defensive bounce-back spot because historically that's been the case. Is Carolina scoring more than 17 on Kansas City Sunday? I think the answer is no.
Well, the Panthers, again, a team that's played from behind a lot. I would still say the thing they do the best is use Hubbard. When they're playing good football, they use Hubbard. They rank 24th in the NFL in rushing yards per game. How do you think that's going to go over against the league's best rushing defense? Like, I mean, it's just, they're not.
Yeah. And there's a lot of people on the, you know, that are out there. And I see the text line already. Someone says, I'm a pessimist. I totally get it. I think the game has 17-13 written all over it. I think typically I would be with you because we know the Chiefs, the old, hey, they don't blow anybody out. I think if the Chiefs would have won and they were 10-0 right now, maybe I and played some of their best football the last week, I would probably lean to, I don't know, about 17-13, but I'd be like, okay, the 10.5, I don't know if they cover.
24-13 or something, yeah.
But this team coming off a loss, usually there is a refocus. I don't buy in that, like, oh, they need a loss. I think that stuff gets, I laugh at that sometimes. Like, they didn't need a lose, okay?
No, they could have just kept winning.
But when you do lose, I do think there is a refocus that occurs. I really believe that. That's more about Andy Reid and his philosophy and how they kind of go back and truly self-scout, if you will, and recognize what needs to change. They're not complacent. Some teams like, oh, well, it'll just magically get figured out. No, like, yeah, there's things they have to work on, and I believe this coaching staff time and time again has shown that they are able to correct those mistakes.
I fall short of calling it a, like, wake-up call.
Yeah.
But come on, man. I mean, I don't care what it is. I don't care if it's, like, if you play ping pong with your friends or any other competitive thing you've ever done in your life. They hadn't lost since Christmas last year. You kind of just get used to it. And you go out there sometimes and you're like, yeah, we'll probably win. And I think that there is a complacency that sets in for any person or any team who gets that level of comfort. And sometimes, yes, as you pointed out, a loss like that can be a refocus game. But I think the two wins in a row sometimes, like, convince you that, like, maybe the Panthers are playing good football. I'm just going to tell you right now, dig as deep as you want. Dig in every single category you want, every major, minor category. The Panthers are a bottom five team in every single statistical category available. They are dead last in points scored. They are dead last in points allowed. They are one of the five worst passing offenses, rushing defenses, rushing. I mean, it doesn't matter. They are one of the five worst teams in every conceivable category available in the NFL. If this ain't a get right game, well, then they got problems. Yeah. If I have to come in here on Monday and the Chiefs eked out a win 20-17, I'm going to start looking at their flaws as real flaws and not just flaws I don't care about because they're the two-time defending Super Bowl champions. Like, I'm going to start looking at them more seriously. They should beat the hell out of this team. It's a bad team. Like, one of the worst. There's no other way to describe it.
I was going
to
ask what your level of concern is. Somebody from the text line from the 913, if they don't blow the doors off the Panthers, what is your level of concern? I don't know if you can give like a 1 to 10.
I need to see the gameplay, but if it's just like a grind out 2017 win and it's close the entire time and they got to come back in the fourth, high.
Your concern's like an 8.
High. Yeah, but if it's starting the fourth quarter and the Chiefs are up 20-10 and then it's 20-10 until the 32nd mark of the fourth quarter and the Panthers get a garbage time touchdown and it's all of a sudden a 3-point win, that's the context that we need, because otherwise, then it doesn't matter. I think, yeah, it's of course just how do they look? There's the eye test element. They don't need to win by 20 for me to feel good. If they win by, you know, 8-12 points, that is what they need to, you know what I mean? Like, that's
what Vegas says they should win by.
Right.
It shouldn't be a one possession game is what you're saying.
Unless it's the circumstance that I brought up where, like, they're up by 10 throughout the entire game. And then with like 25 seconds, Bryce Young throws a 70 yard touchdown with the second stringers in. I'm like, okay, whatever.
Well, they lose 20-17 and Xavier Leggett gets 8 catches for 100 yards on Nazi Johnson. Fine.
Yeah.
I'll come in here in real panic mode then, but I don't think it's going to happen.
This game is more about the areas where we clearly know they have struggled. You mentioned Nazi Johnson. Can he bounce back and have a better performance against Thielen and Leggett? Can the Chiefs find a way to get any pressure on Bryce Young? Can the Chiefs get any better performance from their offensive line? Does Mahomes and Worthy finally connect? Like, that, more than the score, truly, like, it's those things against an opponent that clearly is not near your level. Can you do some of the things that we have all noticed have not been there? Can you do those better, at least against them, to show that there's some, get some confidence up? I think the confidence thing with Worthy is huge here. If the first time all year, can they connect? I guess it'd be the second time, going back to week one, or week two. Can they, maybe for the second or third time all year, connect deep on a Worthy pass? That may not be for a touchdown, but can it be for 40 yards down the field? They do that. That to me is a huge win out of this game, more than winning by 17 points.
It's a get right game. Make sure you get all your ducks in a row.
So we'll talk more about that, I'm sure. And we'll ask Dane Hughes when he joins us next hour. Like, what happens as a player? What's the psyche like? You have a big game, you lose. Now
that's a non-serious opponent.
Yeah, like they can say what they want, but like, everybody knows the Panthers are not a good football team. But how do you, as a player, tell yourself that, no, this team can beat us. How do you go about that? So we'll get into that with Dane and Hughes. Meanwhile, yesterday I was driving back from the show and coming back up here for the betting show, and I was listening to Carrington and Rob, and they had Richard Deitch on. For those that don't know, he's always been kind of the sports media reporter. He works for The Athletic now. He does a sports media podcast. And so they had Richard on to talk about what's going on with Major League Baseball and the TV rights. We filled you guys in a week ago on the latest update with the whole Diamond Sports Group bankruptcy, and could the Royals renew their deal with what was Bally, now it's FanDuel Sports Network or whatever, and their games could be distributed through Amazon. But part of the thought is, you know, Major League Baseball would really like to bring in all the rights in-house and then be able to distribute it out. And long-term, it could actually be a really good thing for the league and for you, the fan. So one of the things they asked Richard Deitch about was that very idea, and he was skeptical, and he is skeptical, of that plan bringing everything in-house because of what's going to happen in New York and LA markets, for example.
I'm a skeptic on this because as someone who lived in New York for 20 years, I find it very hard that the Yankees and the Mets would give up their revenue when it comes to the YES Network and SNY. Now, Rob Manfred is going to try to sell them on the fact that if we can get all our inventory under one roof, ultimately it will pay off for everybody long term. Maybe he's right. But you are making a big ask if you're the owners of the Yankees, the owners of the Mets, the owners of the Dodgers in particular, to walk away from these lucrative deals that have not only made them money, but it's essentially almost guaranteed them the playoffs all the time. Now, I get why, like, the Cardinals or the Royals or the Diamondbacks, you know, sort of name your mid-market kind of teams, why they would want all this, you know, why they'd want essentially an NFL model like you're talking about with Sunday Ticket. So I am a big, big skeptic. If you want to play the optimism role in terms of if you're looking at Major League Baseball, you're correct. I think two-thirds, if I'm right about this, of MLB's 30 teams have their rights available come 2028. So they would be setting, you know, already, they'd be sitting with basically 23, 24 teams to start with, and then they'd have to try to convince the big teams to go along.
So that was Richard Deitch yesterday on The Drive with Carrington.
Look, obviously, I love it.
If you're a Royals fan, you should love the idea of bring it all in-house and let's even this thing out. And that, of course, could also help balance out the competitive balance of spending and everything. But it's a fair point. Like, if I was the owners of the Yankees or the Dodgers or
why am I agreeing to this?
It's true. Like, why should they want it? You know what I mean? Like, it's the approach the NFL way back when they were merging made, and like they look bigger picture, and it obviously paid off in a huge way for them. But that's very difficult, I'm sure, to convince the Steinbrenner family or what's his name with the Mets, the name Cohen. How are you going to convince them? And you had a good idea to maybe do that, because otherwise, I don't think this. I'm with Richard Deitch, where I don't think bringing it all in house would work. Because
first,
they got to be on board.
Baseball needs us bad. They are the least competitive balanced sport, maybe on earth. It's really bad. They have no system of checks and measures in order to keep these teams from spinning out of pocket. I mean, we can break down tomorrow, even if you want, why if Juan Soto ends up as a Dodgers, baseball is irreparably broken if they can allow that to happen for one team. This is what I would do to solve this problem, because this is good for the sport. One, the argument is actually relatively sound. If you allow me, Rob Manfred, to collectively bargain with these places to sell all of our streaming rights in one place, we're a big bad entity and we can get a massive dollar sign. We're all going to make more money. What I would do in order to convince these small schools, or sorry, these bigger cities in order to do it, is I would do it exactly the way the Big 12 did it to keep Texas and Oklahoma. And I know that in the end it didn't work well or whatever. People were frustrated by it. And I would offer the larger markets, the New York Yankees and the Dodgers and these others, a 10-year ability to get a larger share of the massive TV pie so that we're weaning you off the eventual number. Hey, for a little bit of time, you get a bigger share of the pie. You still make more than us. Okay, we're sorry. But the point is that eventually we got to find a way to slide closer to making these franchises more competitively balanced between each other. So we're going to give you some time to work yourself off of those TV deals, and then we're all going to get rich together. Because the truth is, baseball needs this, because one of the issues they have with the sport is the regional nature of it. And part of the reason is because you can't care about teams outside of yours because you're operating essentially under a different system. That's how I would attempt to go about this if I were Manfred. I hope he finds some way to convince the owners to do it, because obviously I think it's good for the sport.
He's gonna have to really sell them on the long-term view, yeah, which I think is going to be really challenging considering the amount of money and success that those organizations have had and their TV deals. I mean, they're incredible deals. I mean, we're talking about the YES Network or SNY in New York, and some of those deals are signed up through 2035, I think, 2036, for the Dodgers deal, I think it is, out in LA. And so how do you convince them? You're saying, hey, just give them more. You use the Texas example, or just look at it the reverse way. When TCU and West Virginia first joined the Big 12, they got a smaller share.
Yeah.
You know, same, however you want to view it, same kind of concept. I get what you're saying. Maybe, you know, that... It's just, this conversation is the same conversation why during the collective bargaining of Major League Baseball during COVID, when they were trying to figure out how to do things, why they struggled post COVID to try to get everything figured out, why they ultimately got off to a late start for that season or the following season, like, is because getting the higher market teams to understand the long-term view, the whole concept of should we have a salary floor, should we have a salary cap, and all that. The reason why neither one of those exist are because of the same four or five teams we're discussing.
Well, in a five-year time, it's so hard to describe. You're like, how, like, just on top of being in a bigger market and having more value and being able to spend more and all this other stuff, like the Royals TV deal reportedly last year made them about $50 million. Who knows if it'll make them even that this year, because the company who currently has their rights, or had their rights, is bankrupt, and they're the only team in baseball who does not have a television home. Next year, firmly settled. The Dodgers, the Yankees reportedly made about $150 million, and the Dodgers made close to $200 million. So while you're thinking about, like, how can the Dodgers spend so much more on payroll? TV alone has a massive impact on this. In a five-year time period, the Dodgers would be expected to make $1 billion more from their TV deal than the Royals in 5 years. I mean, that's enough, just real quick, for Juan Soto and Shohei Ohtani. Does those seem like a pretty big difference between the teams? And so, like, it's so disproportionate, it's out of damn control. You, like, and I know that they're never going to go salary cap. This is, like, one way to even the playing field without being like, hey, and that's the other deal I would make. Do this for us, and we're never coming for you for a cap, okay? Do this for us, and we're not trying to get a cap implemented under my tenure. You know, we're cool. I'm never going to do that to you.
Look, I'm fully on board with this idea, but I just to play the other side again, imagine if you are the Yankees and the Mets here.
I know.
And what you're saying, like, oh, we'll promise you we'll never have a salary cap. They don't need that promise because they're preventing it from ever happening anyway. They're not worried. You think the Yankees are actually worried that there's ever going to be a salary cap implemented? No, they know that's never happening as well. So you offering me that insurance is offering nothing. And what you said about the salary stuff is true. But again, if I'm the Yankees and Dodgers, if I know what you just said is true, which is that I know I can spend more than you because of my TV deal, why am I agreeing to make it easier on the Royals? Now, I'm just playing the other side. Obviously, here in Kansas City, I would love this, but I do get their viewpoint on it, and this is the challenge that Major League Baseball has and Rob Manfred has with trying to make this thing work. All right, the other part that Richard Deitch talked to CDOT about yesterday on the drive when I was driving around, I heard, was this thought of where streaming is headed. And whether we're talking NFL or Major League Baseball, we all know everybody's upset that, you know, they have to have a different app, or they got to pay another $9.99 a month, and mm-hmm. it's basically cable again, and all that. We're all on the same page. But it's not changing. This is where we're at in 2024. Listen to Richard Deitch talk about the cost for consumers moving forward with sports.
Like, the one thing, I hate to say, but the one thing you could always bet on is ultimately the consumer is going to pay more for sports. So Manfred may be able to pull this off. But again, I would just, for anybody listening, your audience, if you are a diehard baseball fan, the likelihood is that you are going to have three or four, I'd say minimum, streaming services to watch all of these games. Now, again, a lot of people, you know, particularly men under the age of 40, they have discretionary income, and they're willing to pay for it. But in many ways, sports heading forward, particularly in the 2030s, it's kind of going to be an upper middle class play. You're going to have to spend some money in order to watch this stuff.
I mean, that's disheartening, I think, for a lot of people to hear, like, the reality of the situation that if you're a diehard sports fan and you're trying to watch, in this case, you're talking about baseball, but I think that what his answer to me applies for all the leagues going forward.
Right now, if you wanted to watch a Chiefs game and you lived just outside the local TV viewing market, you already know this. You have to have six apps to watch the Chiefs. This year alone, you would have to have Netflix, some sort of like YouTube channel, right, to watch it on like CBS, Peacock, I mean, like, there's like, they're already on like four or five channels. So you already have to have that for football. The difference is locally, you don't notice it because you get to just watch on the antenna or watch on like the local CBS or Fox. Here's the difference for baseball and why I don't care. I'll already pay the flat. I'll pay the $19.99 a month for Bally or the, I'm fine to pay that. I understand that that's the way it's going. I've decided that that's a price for the other five apps that they might end on up in the year. If it's a one-off game, I'll just miss the game.
There's 162 of them.
I'm just saying. Yeah. There's Friday night, Apple TV. You got an Apple TV to watch the Royals. Guess what I won't do? I just won't watch them. I'll just let that one go.
Cody, that happened this year. They played 16. They played on a couple Friday nights this year on Apple TV, and people didn't watch.
If I don't have Apple TV, I'll just let those games go. If they're like, hey, tonight on Peacock, the Royals are going to play the Orioles. I'll be like, I guess I'm not watching the Royals versus Orioles. I'll just tune in to 96.5 The Fan, the home of the Royals. Whatever, right?
Yeah.
With baseball, they're never going to convince me to sign up to 72 apps to watch the game.
No.
I'll watch the majority on the price.
I'm with you on baseball. The rest. I'm with you on baseball. Same way. There's so many games, it's not a big deal if I miss three games that are on TV. I was totally with you. I think the challenge is, his answer was about baseball, but I think it speaks to, he said the 2030s, so which is, I know, it seems like it's far away, but it's going to be about five years away here in a few months. So it's not, it'll sneak up on you before you know it. Hell, the World Cup is happening in 2026. We've been talking about that for a while. That's not that far off either. So in the 2030s, let's just say, what you said about the apps, that you won't have that app for baseball. Yeah, but where we're trending is you're going to need, for even the NFL, to watch these games, most likely, four or five apps. Mm-hmm. And they may hopefully have some overlap to where, all right, baseball, like right now, hockey's on ESPN Plus. A lot of their games on ESPN Plus. There's a chance that Major League Baseball games could be on ESPN Plus. At least then you're getting two major sports on that one app, and that's what'll be interesting to me.
That's what they're banking on.
Do we see any bit of consolidation? He's saying no for baseball. He thinks it'll only continue to broaden. But do we see any consolidation for some of this? And ultimately, decisions are going to have to be made, as he said. Like, depending on your financial situation and where you're at in life. You know, some people will be like, fine, I don't care. There'll be others that'll say, all right, we're gonna have to make a choice. So what are we gonna watch? And if you're baseball, because of where you are out of the big three, there'll be the diehard baseball fan, but the casual fan is gonna choose the NFL over baseball. We know that's the case right now.
They're already choosing it. I'll just start rotating. That's what I've already started doing. If a show that you like is on Apple TV now, you have it until that show's not airing, and then you get rid of that one for a little while and start at the other one you want.
Coming up next, as we're just getting started here on a Thursday, it's Cody and Gold. One thing Andy Reid has a chance to do on Sunday that can ultimately impact his legacy when it's all said and done, plus another sign of why a certain executive around here did not get enough love. We'll explain that next. Coming up in about 15 minutes, we'll get to the trash of the day a little bit earlier than we normally do. If you normally don't catch the 11 o'clock hour, we do something called trash of the day around 11:20. Moved it up today because we shuffled the chairs around a little bit. Dane and Hugh's going to join us in the 11 o'clock hour today, so we're excited to have that. So we'll get to trash in just a little bit. But on Sunday, when the Chiefs take on the Panthers, Andy Reid could actually clinch his 19th season with double-digit wins. 19 years, that puts him only behind Bill Belichick and Don Shula, okay? Some of the greatest coaches of all time. And he obviously is already considered, Andy Reid, that is, one of the greatest coaches of all time. They each had 20 seasons with at least 10 wins. And this isn't a Hall of Fame discussion. This is what he is chasing. Maybe he won't publicly say it, but I think fans in Kansas City would certainly love for this to be the case, which is greatest coach of all time. And can he be considered that universally by the time his career is over? The biggest challenge, of course, is Bill Belichick. And I think whether or not Belichick coaches again is a huge factor in this, because right now, what, Andy's 5 or 6 wins off the playoff total win pace or mark for Bill Belichick. We know the rings, is another aspect of this too. And we know how it ended for Belichick. So if Belichick doesn't ever coach again, and we'll find out this offseason.
Reports are he still wants to, but right. Yeah.
But if he doesn't, then it really means Andy is going to for sure go out on a much higher note than Bill Belichick did. And maybe with another ring or two when it's all said and done. And the narrative around Andy is going to be way more positive as, oh yeah, that guy was the greatest coach of all time, because he's going to finish his entire career the way that Belichick had, of course, in the middle of his career.
When I look at it, like, the ring stuff is going to matter in some part of this, right?
Sure.
There's just no way that it's not going to. That's just the way it works. I never think you have to get to the total number in order for me to think that way. Like, for instance, Shula, right? Who is the coach, he is one behind, same as the other. one behind in the total number of 10-win seasons, which I actually think is a great measuring stick of how good of a coach you are. That just means you are consistently great. All you do is win, 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 win. Hell, Mike Tomlin's got to be coming up on that number two at this rate, seeing how the man never has a losing season. But when you look at it, Shula coached in an era where free agency didn't exist.
Yep.
Like, no offense, like, that is playing in a whole different rule set.
But that's why I think Andy Reid, it's an Andy Reid-Belichick conversation, not an Andy Reid-Shula. Also, Andy's now 7 wins clear of Shula in the postseason.
Agreed.
And he's already, you know, Super Bowl ring-wise, too. He's already in the same number.
So, much like Patrick Mahomes, with one more ring, Andy Reid becomes the second most prolific Super Bowl winning coach in NFL history. He'll be at 4. The only other person at 4 is Chuck Knoll, then Bill Belichick at 6. I think simply by winning the Super Bowl sometime in the next 2 years, as long as Bill Belichick never wins one again, I think you can make an argument for Andy Reid as the single greatest coach of all time. He did a huge chunk of this without the all-time great quarterback. Bill Belichick did it all with an all-time great quarterback. Every single one of his accomplishments, all 6 Super Bowl wins, all of those 10-win seasons, all the things that Bill Belichick has accomplished is with the single most effective quarterback in NFL history. Right now, people's single greatest quarterback in NFL history. All of it was that. Half of Andy Reid's accomplishments are with Donovan McNabb and Michael Vick and Kevin Cobb and Alex Smith. About a third of his, you know, like the other half or a third or what, it's probably 2/3 with those guys and 1/3 with Patrick Mahomes. He gets some points for that.
That should be weighed into this. And I do think just from a narrative perspective, ending your career the way it looks like Andy's going to end it is going to be strong. And let's just be real. If we're going to talk about the narrow margin, and that's always important to know whether we're talking about quarterback greatest of all time. No, we are going to nitpick on these conversations because we're literally talking about the greatest of all time. Not is he a Hall of Famer? That's already settled. Same
you're
with Mahomes.
Between the single biggest conversation.
And so part of the narrative, and two people have texted this in as well. We were going to get there as well. There's the head-to-head stuff, sure, where Bill Belichick, I believe, has a winning record against Andy. But the cheating stuff will get brought up. There's going to be a lot of people that are going to say Andy Reid did not cheat. He did not have Spygate. He did not have Deflategate, even though that one was
that
a little
one
more
was bogus.
But Spygate was the big one, obviously.
That one was for real.
The Spygate was the biggest one. He didn't have that around his career either. And if we're talking about the narrow margin, and Andy is one ring off when it's all said and done, let's say, but he has more playoff wins than Bill Belichick when it's done. And he you know, overall wins are very close. And he's coming off potentially a Super Bowl when he retires or within the last 3 years or something like that when ultimately he retires. I think that will matter for a lot of people. Not in New England. Obviously, they're going to always say it's Belichick. I get that. I'm talking about the masses, the folks that are the historians of the game that are going to ultimately be part of this conversation and fans.
Convincing a national TV audience on a coast. By the way, owned is a little bit strong. Andy Reid is 5-7 career against Bill Belichick.
I didn't say owned, I don't think.
No, somebody on the text line did. I think you read their text line and been like, Bill owned Andy head-to-head.
He had a better record.
5-7. Now, and you're going to be like, well, he beat him in the playoffs twice. Okay, but one time was with Alex Smith versus Tom Brady. So that, same problem involved. Now, one was Patrick Mahomes versus that, I will say, in his first full year as an NFL starter. So again, I am allowed context in this situation. But some of the numbers that you should be surprised by, again, considering which quarterback they got to do the majority of it with. As it sits right now, Andy Reid is only 5 playoff wins behind Bill Belichick all time. Only 5. That is crazy impressive, considering, again, the two quarterbacks, if you look at the 20 years comparatively. That impresses me a lot. And I get it. He now is racking up those totals because of the quarterback that he has.
And there's not the double bye. Some people would say there's not the double bye.
And there's not the double bye, so you are able to pick up more wins. Although, again, I would make the argument that makes it harder to win in the postseason and harder to win Super Bowls.
Yeah.
Like, the whole in-number game is now more difficult by the fact that if you are not the number one seed, you are not guaranteed only 2 games before getting to a Super Bowl, adding a completely different challenge to the mix. I think Andy is pretty simply 1 Super Bowl and a few more continued seasons like this away, assuming Bill Belichick doesn't accomplish something either in a new coaching venture or not. Because here's the other thing. Andy Reid's going to win this by default. If Bill Belichick comes back to coach and he takes, let's say, the Jags job, and it doesn't go great.
Ooh. That's what I'm saying about how they end their
that's
career.
That's going to hurt.
That's what I'm saying about how they, like, the fan and what is, you know, call it recency bias, fine. But that will factor in for a lot of people. If Andy's out there going to Super Bowls in his final couple years and Bill Belichick either is retired the way he did, or what you just said, that he comes back and he doesn't make the playoffs, or he's out in the wild card weekend.
Yeah.
I think that will impact someone. Like, this is why these conversations are a ton of fun. 913-586-7965. Someone said Shula did it when there were fewer games, therefore fewer opportunities. Shula should always be number one, from David in Kansas City. I love these conversations because there are fair points. You can certainly make some points for each individual. I don't think the comparison, when it's all said and done, is going to be between Shula, Andy, and
Bill
Belichick.
Mostly because a lot of people would be having that conversation, won't remember watching Don Shula coach.
Maybe that's fair too.
Or will remember watching him coach, but like in the 80s when, like, or the early 90s when the Dolphins were fine under Marino, but not a Super Bowl winning team.
Yeah, I think when the career is finally capped off for both Belichick and Andy, whenever that is, I don't think the conversation will be about more than just those two individuals for greatest of all time. But these are kind of fun. We'll revisit this coming up a little bit later on.
I guess, do you think Andy will coach long enough? Is there any chance he can catch Shula for all-time wins?
Where are they at?
No chance. Well, 200. Okay, so career wins. Andy Reid has 267. He trails Bill Belichick by about 30. That's the next. But 328. Is the current record. 328. So he's got to get another 33-60.
Average.
He's got to get another 60 career wins.
And he can sometimes win 14, but let's do an average of 12 wins a year. How many years does he have?
Five. He's got to coach 5 years if he gets 12.
And there's some years where he's winning more than 12.
I'll be honest.
Can he coach four more?
That ain't crazy.
Basically, I think, honestly, will he coach four more to get, it was what it would probably take.
It's not crazy.
No,
it's not out of the question. I don't think he'll get it, but it's you definitely can't say it's out of the question.
No, I think, 300, which basically gets you to Bill Belichick's number. If Bill doesn't coach, he'll pass Bill Belichick in the next 2.5-3 years.
Yeah. And I think he's coaching.
3 years, I guess.
That goes back to the same thing. Anytime we talk about Andy Reid and legacy and Willie Ketch, it's like, part of this is how much longer do you think he's going to coach? And I still think he's going to coach. I told you 3 years ago I thought he was coaching at least 5 more years, and I'll tell you today I think he's coaching at least 5 more. Like, there's no end in sight for Andy Reid. I don't care how many articles Mike Florio wants to write. He has never given any indication he wants to stop coaching football.
I agree. I'm just laughing because as we're looking at now that we're digging deep into the career stats for each of these coaches, just different eras of football, right? And so it has the wins and losses, right? Andy's 267 and 145. And it's funny just because back then with George Halas and some of these guys, the ties were a real thing. And so, like, Don Shula had 6 ties. Right. George Halas had 31 ties in his coaching
31?
Career.
31?
Yeah, well, he was coaching in the 20s and the 30s in some cases.
Yeah, that's true.
Just different era. And Belichick has never had a tie in his career, and then Andy has one. But that's just an era thing, because Curly Lambeau had 22 ties. Just, we don't see, that's just not something that's a, it's not a thing other than for Hylas and Curly Lambeau at all.
I was trying to look it up by win percentage, but it's all screwy because it's a bunch of, like, nobodies. Like, technically, Dave Wannstedt has a better...
No, Guy Chamberlain.
Oh, wow.
No, just than some other people. I'm not, like, not than most people.
I wasn't expecting Guy Curly Lambeau to come up on the show today.
John Madden is the second best win percentage in NFL history.
Well, that's why he got all those video games, you know?
That's why. That's the only reason why. Is that what you're saying? That's the only reason, huh?
So are you Matt LaFleur is actually in the top, like, 20.
He is.
So are you saying that if they come out with a new game, like if ESPN comes back out, it's going to be the Andy Reid NFL 2K5 or 2K20, whatever.
I think Madden's just the name for eternity now, but yeah.
Someone actually, this is a really good point, actually, on the text line. Someone brought up, hey, also to catch Shula, if the league in the next 4 years expands to 18 games, there's an extra one for Andy to get there quicker.
And no, by the way, I would just say, like, this point is because the NFL is not like baseball and they don't care about the counting stats. No one will ever reference that, by the way. No one will ever care that Andy Reid beat Shula playing with more games.
Oh, no, I think some people.
I don't think anyone.
Not the casual, but like in the greatest of all time conversation, people will definitely use that as a pro or con for their case. Now, the 30 years from now, the random NFL fan is not going to probably, for, you know, top of mind bring that up, but if someone's having like a true argument about it, they would use that. Anyway, fun stuff there talking about Andy Reid, who does once again have a chance to clinch his 19th season with double-digit wins with a win on Sunday against the Panthers. Let's talk baseball briefly before we get to the trash of the day. That is because the NFL, or the MLB, excuse me, continues to trickle out
MVP
awards.
MVP comes out tonight.
MVP is tonight. Spoiler, Aaron Judge is going to win. Seth
Hopefully
Lugo
not unanimous.
Is, yeah, true.
He's probably going to win unanimous.
He's probably going to. But last night, saw the Cy Young Awards announced. No surprises on either side. But Seth Lugo and Cole Reagans both finished top five. Lugo finished runner-up. Mm-hmm. Cole Reagans was fourth in this one, just behind Emmanuel Clase, the closer from the Cleveland Guardians. So the Royals had two pitchers.
Two starters in the top three.
In the top three of the Cy Young. Bobby's going to be runner-up, we presume, tonight. The manager was runner-up, was Q. J.J. Piccolo somehow didn't win executive of the executive of the year. It's just like, this whole thing is pretty funny in a way to step back and discuss the acquisitions and what the cost was to acquire two of the pitchers we just discussed, Lugo and Reagans, and yet it's not good enough for executive of the year.
More time is needed to push him higher up this list, but I can confidently say right now, J.J. Piccolo is a top 10 GM in baseball. Show me an argument on the opposite side of it. He works with less resources than 90% of the rest of baseball, and he got two top five finishers in the AL Cy Young on one, a below league market deal, like not market deal for what he was owed, but low below market of what a normal starter gets in baseball. And the other guy he got for 3 months of Aroldis Chapman. Those are the guys who just finished two in the top four of the MLB Cy Young. He added Cutrero after taking over for Dayton Moore. And I think the underrated part of this is he brought in Brian Sweeney. He found a capable pitching coach to make a difference on this. So, like, he's a top 10 GM in baseball right now. It is kind of stupid he didn't win executive of the year. I'm sorry, just real quick. So, just all these, second and fourth in the Cy Young, runner-up for manager of the year, went from 56 wins to a playoff team. I'm just real
Again,
quick.
Again, the Brewers executive won.
What does it take in somebody, order to get the award?
People were asking the text line who actually won executive of the year. A couple weeks ago, it was announced it was the Brewers executive.
And what, the Brewers won one more game than they did last year?
Correct. They did lose a star player.
We discussed it. Star player and... There was a thought they were going to have a huge drop-off, and they didn't, and then they still won the division. But yes, this is why any of the awards markets, whether we're talking NFL MVP or Major League Baseball MVP, like all this stuff, when you have not computers spitting out, you know, just results space, and when you have humans factoring in to the voting process, you're going to have some bizarre ballots that come out. And we saw that with what's his name being left off. Q was left off somebody's ballot the other night for manager of the year, which how do you even leave him off the ballot? I am fascinated a little bit of just where the votes look like tonight for Bobby Witt Jr., even though we all know he's probably going to be runner up, but just, is it unanimous? Does somebody out there give him, you know, the third place votes instead of second? He should have no votes other than first or second tonight. Aaron Judge should obviously probably only have first place votes.
I guarantee you that if you like made a national person put together a list right now of the best general managers in all of baseball, I bet national people wouldn't have JJ in the top 10. And it's a mistake because
I'd be lying if I told you I can name more than like five GMs in baseball.
Besides Cashman or Chris Young.
It's hard for me to judge other GMs because I don't really know the names.
But just base it on team. Yeah. Who are the teams that have the most success given the resources? All right, fine. You want to put the Dodgers guy in there because while he has all the resources in the entire world, he certainly takes advantage of it. But tell me how Brian Cashman is doing a better job than J.J. Piccolo. He has every single available resource to him on the entire planet. That man can't even... He got to three World Series. I guess he got into three World Series. And the most recent, doesn't have any wins. Like, and I get it, J.J. Piccolo doesn't either, certainly. But considering the resources and the win totals, I don't know how he's doing a better job, at least on that end. Like, some of this is just, and this is why it's hard in baseball versus, like, the NFL, everyone's putting the same resources. Easy to rank the GMs. Who are the GMs who are having the most success? And somebody's going to be like, well, the one thing you judge them on is, can you keep winning without a star quarterback? Right? Because if you're winning with a star quarterback, ooh, kudos, you did it. But, like, we can all see if you're good at late-round drafting, if you're good at signing extensions that don't go south, all the things that come in there. Right now, JJ's biggest miss as a general manager, as the person in charge of the Kansas City Royals, Hunter Renfro? Like what's the single biggest miss for him? Asa Lacy? And I actually think that was Dayton. So, not even that one. So, like, it's hard right now because the most impressive thing to me to JJ right now is there's no big misses. No free agent deal that blew up in their face. No draft pick so far that has blown up in his face. I understand he's part of the previous regime. I am judging him for the time that he was the general manager of the Kansas, and like he was the person in charge.
Overall, what should matter most about this entire conversation, and when we mentioned Lugo and Reagans finishing top five, it just what we're discussing with JJ and decision-making process and what they have, is that this should make you just feel good about future decisions down the road. And ultimately,
we should just feel good rather than care what they think.
Leading you to believe that this is a team that can sustain success, that they have the right people in place to continue to evaluate big league talent. And hopefully, eventually, we're going to find out that they're evaluating through the draft as well. It's too early in the process to find out if this regime is hitting on draft picks yet. It's a couple years away from us really finding that out and developing pitching at the minor league level. But at the big league level, it's very clear. This is a much improved organization in terms of evaluating big league talent, whether it's free agency, the two names we just mentioned, Lugo and free agency, and then Reagans, of course, through trade. Last year, the Urseg trade, that clearly is another sign that at the big league level, evaluating talent, they know what they're doing there. That should give you confidence heading into 2025 and beyond that this group is not only on the right track, but you got the right people, period, in place.
Trash of the day.
All right, let's get to this. Has to do with a Florida man, of course. Been a bit since we were down there.
It's been a little while since we did a Florida man trash of the day.
Yeah,
it was a feel-good one yesterday.
So it was. This one's pretty simple. It just has to do with a burglary in Florida. Polk County man was arrested last week. He burglarized a home. And a gentleman decided to post a video of this. The man that got arrested that I'm talking about is not the man that was burglarizing the home.
What?
Yeah.
Not the guy who broke in?
No, he was attacked in his home. So, like, why did he get arrested? Well, no matter what the circumstances, if you're going to call the police, you might not want to leave the cocaine sitting out around the house. Might not want to do that.
Dude.
Yeah.
Dude. So he called the police because someone broke into his house, but he just got all this cocaine sitting out?
Yeah.
Oh.
Somebody, it was actually initially a 14-year-old kicked in this gentleman's door and hit him with a red broom handle, prompting this gentleman to call 911. When they were investigating and processing the crime scene inside the home, they came across cocaine in plain view. He confessed he was arrested, and both burglary and battery charges are felonies for the kid, but this guy got charged with possession of cocaine and drug paraphernalia.
That is...
So you get robbed, you get beat up, and unfortunately you left the cocaine out. You know?
I'll just tell you right now, if you're regularly committing your own crimes, you can't really report other people's crimes. You gotta chill. Because...
So you're saying take your L and get beaten in the face with a
Last 12 hours in your house... Mm-hmm. You were doing cocaine. You got to just take the L. Fix the door.
You are.
Get to the hardware store. Or at least clean up first something.
You're acting like, though, that, and I don't know if he was under the influence at the time, but someone that has cocaine in plain view is thinking straight in that moment. That's the problem here.
I better clean up my cocaine and go put it away for a minute.
Now, I can't speak from experience. I don't know how the mind works in that moment.
We've already discussed those. I've had my house broken into one time.
Drew, can you speak from experience? Does it change your judgment at all?
No, I cannot speak from experience.
I would just say in general, if we were going to generalize it, I think drugs probably alter your
maybe he wasn't thinking right when he got beat up and didn't think that before I call the police, I should move the cocaine off the table.
Did it say whether the 14-year-old wanted cocaine?
No, I don't.
Did he break in for his
car? That's what I'm saying. I don't know what the motive is or was.
Hey, at least he didn't, like, pin it on the kid. You know, that he didn't deserve it. I'd be like, that was his cocaine.
Someone
he broke in here and left all this cocaine here. It's crazy.
What? So you're the
That's where he got all the energy. He hit me with this broom.
The kid broke into the house, did a line of cocaine, and hit me with a broom handle.
I'm just saying, like, he could have done that and probably somewhat gotten away with it because it would have been he's already been assaulted in his own home, a somewhat believable storyline.
Excellent.
But I'm glad he didn't, you know?
From the 913, I've never thought more clearly than I'm on.
Someone said, that cocaine must not be very good. No way a 14-year-old is getting the best of me if I'm on coke.
So it says, who calls the cops while they're doing drugs? That's the point, exactly.
I'm sure this is not the first time, like, a drug dealer has been like, they robbed me. And they're like, what do they rob you of? All of my drugs and money.
Oh, we've had those
and
before.
And you're like, come on, man. Cops can't help you.
Yeah.
You're doing illegal activity.
We've had that trash of the day before where someone absolutely called the cops and said that somebody robbed them when they were trying to buy drugs from them. Like, we've definitely had those. Definitely had those. That's the trash of the day. Up next, we'll take a deeper look at what's remaining ahead for the Chiefs schedule-wise. What is actually the toughest? Plus, former Chiefs wide receiver Danon Hughes is going to tell us how a player might approach a game like this when everybody from the outside knows Carolina is a lesser opponent.